Eko Bahusya. He was one and desired to become many. And Prabhupada also quotes this from the Chandogya Upanishad. So then Arjuna may ask, if you are detached and nirvikar, you have no transformations, then how do you create? If you are detached and you don't transform yourself, then how do you create this world? So now Krishna explains and answers that question. Prakritim svamavashtabhya visrajami puna punaha bhutagramam imam kritsnam avasham prakriter vashad. The whole cosmic order is under me. Under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again. And under my will, it is annihilated at the end. So Krishna says, Prakritim svam, that is the material nature, his own personal self. He's the controller of the material nature. So he creates through the material nature. That's his energy. Prabhupada writes, this material world is a manifestation of the inferior energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This has been explained several times. At the creation, the material energy is let loose as the Mahatattva, into which the Lord, as his first Purusha incarnation, Mahavishnu, enters. He lies within the causal ocean and breathes out innumerable universes, and into each universe the Lord again enters as Garbhodaksha Vishnu. Each universe is in that way created. He still further manifests himself as Shirodaksha Vishnu, and that Vishnu enters into everything, even into the minute atom. This fact is explained here. He enters into everything. Avashtabhya. He enters within the property as the form of the Paramatma. In this way, he directs the property through his expansions. And the property is avasham prakritaravashat. There's a kind of automation in the material energy. Because it sounds, he's controlling and entering into the energy. But at the same time, he says it's automatically happening. At the same time, he says, I'm controlling that. It's under my will. So these two things are simultaneously going on. They seem contradictory, but they're not. He's controlling it, but it has a kind of automative, function. And that's due to the guidance of the Supersoul, his expansion. Krishna says, taking help of my nature, I create again and again. Krishna said previously that I am neither transformed nor attached. Then how does he create? Through his nature. And Prabhupada also discussed about the living entities, about the different species, men, beasts, birds, animals. That's also described by Baladeva Nibhushan. He says, different entities take births, different births according to the past karma. I become situated in the material modes of nature by my will, and the three modes become transformed. Thus I create the four kinds of living entities who take birth through eggs, womb, perspiration, and seeds. This happens because they have a stock of past karma, and they become controlled by that. I am aloof, but by my will, my sankalpa, I do everything without touching the material nature. So then the question is raised. Arjuna says, you are performing so many activities, yet you don't become bound like the living entities. How is that? And Krishna answers in text 9. Nachamam tanikarmani nibhadnanti dhananjaya Udasinavad asinam asaktam teshu karmasu. O Dhananjaya, all this work cannot bind me. I am ever detached from all these material activities, seated as though neutral. So this is how he can perform the acts of creation without becoming bound, because he is detached. Because the being bound is all based upon being attached. One is attached, then he becomes bound by his actions. And if one is detached, then he's not bound. So Krishna is udasinavat. It means like detached, or as if neutral, as if unconcerned, or like indifferent. Krishna says, I'm like one who is indifferent, although I'm not actually indifferent. In other words, Krishna cares about the material creation. It's not that he doesn't care, but he's neutral. So that's why he says, udasinavat, like neutral. He says, rather, I'm always absorbed in my own blissful spiritual activities. So it's as if he was neutral. Because if he's completely neutral, then how is he the karta, the doer? Right? And he can't be completely aloof or neutral or indifferent. So therefore he says he's udasinava, like neutral. He's active, just impartial. So we have to become like that too. When we perform our actions, we're active, we care, but at the same time, we're impartial, we're indifferent. We're not personally attached to the results of our work. But we're responsible and conscientious because we want the result for Krishna's pleasure. But we're not personally attached for our own enjoyment. So Krishna also works like that. Prabhupada says, although he has control over every minute detail of material activities, he's sitting as if neutral. Right? He's in control of every minute detail, right? Not a blade of grass moves. But he's sitting as if neutral. The example can be given of a high court judge sitting on his bench. By his order, so many things are happening. Someone's being hanged, someone's put in jail, someone's awarded wealth, but he's still neutral. He has nothing to do with all that gain and loss. Similarly, the Lord is always neutral, although he has his hand in every sphere of activity. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that a king's orders are carried out by his ministers. Still, unless he is present on his throne, his ministers cannot do anything. Similarly, unless I supervise, Prakriti cannot do anything. And in the next verse, the same example is given, but particularly Ambarish Maharaj is given in text 10 by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. It says that Ambarish Maharaj was the king in Mathura, and his only business was to do puja. Yet still somehow the kingdom was maintained perfectly just by the fact that he was the kind of presiding king. But he didn't get too much involved with the administration because he was just busy doing puja all day. You know, he had no time for all these things. But somehow, by his potency, he was presiding, and his prakriti, his administration, it worked out all the details. So Arjuna has not fully understood how the Lord can be neutral, as you may also be still a little confused. So Krishna speaks verse 10 to explain his neutrality further. Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sa chara charam hetunanena kunteya jagatmi parivartate. This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. That was a famous verse Prabhupada quoted many times. So you have this word in Hindi, right? Adhyaksha, right? Supervisor, superintendent, like in the school, right? What do we call it in English? Principal, the principal of the school, right? Yeah, the director. So everything's under his eyes. He's the supervisor, the supervision. He's giving supervision, right? This is a good word, adhyaksha, right? Because he's overlooking. Aksha means eyes, and adi means above. So he's above, looking down on everything, yeah, supervising, right? So he's Krishna saying this, I'm the supervisor. This is going on by me. The prakriti, the moving and non-moving beings. They're all manifested and all going on by me. So I am the hetu, ultimately, the efficient material cause. He's the remote cause behind everything. And his energy is the immediate cause. Prabhupada writes, because he glances over material nature, there is undoubtedly activity on the part of the Supreme Lord, but he has nothing to do with the manifestation of the material world directly. And he gives the example about the fragrance of the flower being smelled by a person. He doesn't have to directly touch the flower. It's smelled by his olfactory sense. His nose is smelling the flower, right? The power, his smelling power is coming in contact with the aroma. So Krishna just glances and everything automatically happens. So we've given you a lot of examples and tried to explain this as much as possible. I think it's not that difficult. Well, they are responsible, right? If the management system is such that the supervisor gives them some scope for making decisions, which he should, because otherwise he'll be, you know, kind of overburdened, right? So he has to give them some parameters and then just give them the ball and let them do as they like. So they may drop the ball or they may make some mistakes. And the supervisor comes regularly and he tries to help the person to do that job. So the department head has some sense of responsibility because he's been being given some freedom to use his creativity in the way that he sees fit. But if the director is not giving the person any, he's like breathing down his neck at every moment, and he's telling him just what to do, then that means that person won't take responsibility then. But so the director has to give enough leeway, you know, freedom, and let the person choose. Because then when he can use his creative energies, then he takes responsibility. Because then he says, now this is my job, I can do it how I like, within these parameters set by my supervisor. And this way the responsibility is actually handed down to the next person. I think this is a pretty major principle in management and stuff, right? I mean, I'm not an expert, but I know this, at least this idea. I wrote about this in my book also about freedom. No, that's during the partial manifestation. But at this... Yeah, that's the total annihilation. That's different now. Because then they all go into Mahavishnu.
In Brahma
Yeah, as far as I understand. Because he's beyond the universes. But the universes themselves go inside of Mahavishnu. Because he breathes in, and then everything is sucked back into him. There's nothing left at all. Yeah. That's why it said sometimes that the living entities come from Mahavishnu. Because they, then you know, the next, when he breathes out, the next creation, they come from him. Well, in the mode of goodness, a person works out of duty. In passion, he's working, motivated to enjoy the result of his work. So a devotee tries to function in the mode of goodness. That he does things out of duty. And gradually, as he becomes detached and purified, then he can easily act in that way. Caring and being conscientious and responsible without, you know, trying to get a piece of the pie at the end, so to speak, you know, for himself, for fame or adoration or title or power or money. Because the person's goodness is not so inspired by those things. Person in goodness kind of maybe attached to the work itself. And then later, if someone's a devotee, he becomes attached to Krishna. So then his attachment to the result is kind of transferred to his attachment to Krishna. Because there always has to be some attachment. You know. So then he wants to get the result done to please Guru and Krishna. But there's not this kind of madness and feverish mentality which is found in the person in passion who's personally trying to get it for himself. You know. But there's still an kind of thrust or energy to get the result. But it's of a different nature. That's due to his attachment to Krishna. So, anyway, we have to be introspective. And we can judge to a certain degree by the mental, you know, our mind's movements. If we see that we're trying to relish some thing, some result, subtle or gross, from our action, our activity, our service, then Krishna gradually will kind of put us in a situation where we have to do the work without the, you know, getting a cut of the pie, so to speak. You know, so that it kind of purifies us because we continue doing the service without trying to enjoy the fruit. So then gradually we get purified from that tendency, which is passion. I've seen that Krishna, you know, he puts his devotees in situations and tests them again and again in such a way. Especially if someone's a preacher or a book distributor. Then he's like daily having to face this kind of thing. And when he takes on a very humble mood that, anyway, okay, I'm not going to do big today, but let me just do some service. Just because I'm out here, at least I should do something. Make myself useful. Like, you know, some instrument. So when he gets in that mentality, then Krishna gives so much result. Big result. Then he becomes surprised. Oh, wow. I was doing very poorly, but now I have this big result. Then it's very clear that it's just Krishna. So when the devotee has the right mentality, then Krishna gives the result. But when he sees that a big result affects his devotee, and then he becomes proud or whatever, then he takes it away. I mean, people who distribute books, they know this very, very much, because it becomes like a daily affair between you and Krishna. Will Krishna give me results today? Well, I guess he might if I have the right attitude, if I pray to him, You know, if I'm trying to help the poor suffering people, and you know, then he'll give me some result. But if I'm just trying to get a big name for myself, that I'm the best preacher in Maharashtra, the biggest book distributor, you know, the most powerful lecturer, like this, then Krishna will take everything away from you. Right? I wanted to kind of go back to the first three verses, because there Krishna was talking about devotional service, how it's very, easy and joyful, and one gets direct, enlightenment. So I was just wondering that what process of devotional service enlivens you personally? What's the thing that kind of inspires you the most? What do you like? What kind of connects you very strongly with Krishna? You can also say like that. Hearing the lectures of your spiritual master. Okay, someone else, thank you. Okay, yes? Dedication. And what do you mean? You mean seeing how all the devotees are dedicated to Prabhupada's mission in the preaching field in various ways? And also what?
And current devotees. Dedication of Srila Prabhupada, his personal...
Oh, Prabhupada's personal dedication.
How much he worked hard for...
But what about a direct activity that you perform? Huh?
I try to assist them.
Okay, but what do you do? How do you do that? What the kind of devotional service that you feel like inspired by when you perform that? By assisting those? How do you assist the preachers? So any of those give you more enlivenment or enlightenment more than others? Okay. Directly, one-to-one, or giving lectures?
One-to-one is more.
Uh-huh. Okay, good. Someone else? Menial service. What's your favorite menial service? Of all the menial services, which one inspires you the most? Cleaning the clothes of the devotees?
Folding
the clothes. Okay, good. Someone else? Radhisham, you wanted to say? Making brahmacharis. Right, that's good. Yeah. Yes. Right. And that some of that smile is flashing your way. Yeah. All right, good. Someone else? Chaitanya Charan, Prabhu? Ah. You're a contemplative type. Contemplating. Meditation on philosophy. Yeah, Shravanam. Yeah, Smaranam, Shravanam. Yes, Shamanan. Dancing, Haribo, Haribo. Good. Okay, now I wanted to move, huh? Yes. Stealing them away from the other organization. Converting, right? Converting others. Huh? Okay. Okay, now I want to talk about faith a little bit. I want to ask you, what is real faith? We discussed it. We read something about it in Prabhupada's commentary, which was interesting, talking about different levels. Prabhupada said faith is created by associating with devotees. And I also added that when you apply yourself to the process, you know, with and you endeavor, and then you get some result, that also increases your faith. So one is like just kind of on your own, in one sense, and the other one is more dependent on association. But what would you say is real faith? What does faith mean to you? Mm-hmm, right. So you try to apply that in your life. Right. You put all your chips on bhakti and then let everything else kind of fall into place after that. Is that a good description? That's what the verse says, right? Then just by doing bhakti alone, everything else is taken care of automatically. Right? So that, like when someone's betting in a casino, right? He puts all his chips on one number. Said, okay, turn the wheel now, right? Other people, they put a little bit here on this number, a little on that number, and this number, right? But someone who has faith, like number five, all the chips, big stack, let it ride, you know, in the casino. So you put all your chips on the bhakti, and then just let Krishna turn the wheel. And right? Yeah, it's interesting. Someone else can say something about faith?
Trust in something sublime.
Trust in something sublime. Yes. What else does faith mean to you? Keshavji. Mm-hmm. Right, you see the process works. So you have more faith in the process. See the results. Something else? We're too what? Tiny. Oh yeah, and incapable of. Okay. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, actually it's mentioned that Shraddha actually means faith in the Shastra. Because we have faith in Sadhu and Guru also, but they get their knowledge from Shastra and they just repeat what's in Shastra. So when we see that someone is religious or faithful, it means that he has faith in Shastra. This is actually the kind of technical or specific definition of the word faith or Shraddha. There has to be faith in Shastra, because otherwise nothing else can hold. Because this is the knowledge from God. It's the knowledge that the sadhus and the gurus have. Right? And they apply that knowledge in their lives, which helps us more, but it's based on the scriptures. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written in his Bhagavat that even though the previous acharyas have done all the research work for us and they have come to certain conclusions, but he says that each person should come and knock on the door of the absolute truth on his own, because it also indicates that he has to use his intelligence and go through the process of discrimination and doubt and revelation and, you know, like this, so that he can actually feel and go that he's gone through that process and then come to some point of realization through his own process, processing the knowledge that he's gotten. Of course, there's a difference between skepticism and doubt. But doubt is actually described in the Bhagavatam as a function of the intelligence. Actually, doubt is quite healthy. If it's, it can be unhealthy if you go too far. In other words, if you get information from absolute sources which answer the questions of your doubts, and then you still remain doubtful, that means you're a skeptic, and that's very unhealthy, because there are people like that even in our movement. But so there's a kind of fine line between these things. We simultaneously have to accept, and we have faith in the character of our acharyas. When, especially, we read about their lifetimes, it's just so amazing. They're so, you know, kind of superhuman people, and we, when we see that they have faith in the Bhagavatam and that they live their life according to the Bhagavatam, and they, you know, they spent their whole life dedicated to preaching and so forth, and they've got realization of God, so then that can bring us further, that yes, they have done this, I also want to do this. But we also have to apply ourselves and apply our intelligence and process the knowledge. We have to go through that process ourselves, because then we get conviction and we assimilate the knowledge. It becomes part of us. That assimilation has to be there. That means that you hear the knowledge and then later you question. When the doubts come, you question and you reflect upon that. That's called manana. And right, so there's shravana, manana, and nididhyasana. The nididhyasana means you have assimilated all of these things and you're living and breathing this. So the knowledge is there, but then we have to have this point of reflection, thought, and questioning. And when we question, then the doubts will also come. Some doubt will come. So there's a healthy process of doubting, and then there's also an unhealthy process. No matter what you say or how you explain it, when you give logic and reasoning and historical reference and shastric evidence, and you give it, and then the person still has no faith, then that is not a healthy process of doubting. So there is a slight difference between these things. Now, I wanted to ask, maybe based upon this discussion, we can have a group work for about 5 minutes. You break into small groups. And think about a time in your life when you felt a lack of faith. And share that experience with your God brothers or your associates here, other devotees. And what was the obstacle? And then how did you overcome that? I mean, if you never had any lack of faith, then you can just listen to the others. But if you try to think, I mean, probably there was at least one time in your devotional career that where you've had some lack of faith. And what was that obstacle, and how did you face it, and how did you overcome that? And share that with each other.